Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser, men are more relationship ready, and if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello, hello. My name is Morgana. This is my husband, Devin. We've been married, what, 25 times now in 20 countries?
That's right. His love. I don't need to say anything more. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, and his idea.
Right.
So, I have a quote for you. My husband, the writer, that I thought you would like. I'll get out my midlife reading glasses here. Hemingway wrote, "All men fear death. It's the natural fear that consumes us all. We fear death because we feel that we haven't loved well enough or loved at all, which ultimately are one and the same. However, when you make love with a truly great woman, one that deserves the utmost respect in this world and one that makes you feel truly powerful, that fear of death completely disappears. Because when you are sharing your body and heart with a great woman, the world fades away. You two are the only ones in the entire universe. You conquer what most lesser men have never conquered before. You have conquered a great woman's heart, the most vulnerable thing she can offer to another. Death no longer lingers in the mind. Fear no longer clouds your heart. Only passion for living and for loving become your sole reality. This is no easy task, for it takes insurmountable courage. But remember this, for that moment when you are making love with a woman of true greatness, you will feel immortal." Well, what do you think of that, Devin?
That is some sexually charged Hemingway.
Apologies to my non-cis hetero friends listening and watching, because that, you know, it's Hemingway, it skews that way. I dug that.
Well, you picked it, so you must,
yeah.
you must have liked it to some degree.
I think loving a man or a woman, loving another human being takes a lot of courage. It's not for sissies.
Right. No, I mean, I think Hemingway, Hemingway is Hemingway. So if you haven't read Old Man and the Sea, you need to. I think he hits it on the head, which he did frequently. I mean, I think he keeps things simple. And he's truthful, and you can kind of trust him as a storyteller. And I think he tells a story here. And it's very much about love and vulnerability. I mean, certainly, throws in the charged sexuality. But the truth of the matter is, I think, the fear of death and fear of not being loved or being loving are challenging ideals.
And one of the interesting things about Hemingway, is he's sort of a role model of manliness. Flawed.
Deeply flawed.
But at least, and I'm trying to get you in the picture. There we go. When I was growing up and dating a writer in college, I think he was trying to model himself on Hemingway down to being the worst drunk and cheat, at the University of Massachusetts next door to my college. And that kind of brings up the topic of, what makes a great man? Devin and I were talking about this afternoon that, we get different messages about what makes a great person. But I think that for men, this is a really core question. I was in a cafe years and years ago in Bali, talking to a stranger, because that's one of my favorite things to do before and after I leave my retreat, is hang out in cafes and talk to strangers from around the world. And there was this one conversation that stuck with me all these years, where my conversation partner said to me that he believed there are two core pain questions, and it's different for men and women. Maybe this is true, maybe it's not, but I found it intriguing that the core pain question for women tends to be, am I special enough to be loved? And I know that that's been up for me since my first Disney princess movie. But the question for men isn't, are they special enough to be loved? The pain question for men is, what kind of a man am I? And
I don't know if that's true.
Well,
I don't even know more
about being a man than I am.
Yeah, so I'm surprised you led with that sort of very debatable topic. Maybe that's the whole point.
Okay.
No, I mean, I think when you say what kind of a man, what does that even mean? I mean, what does that mean? Because I have a response to that, but I'm just curious, what was that?
I think men do a lot of heroic and a lot of awful things to fulfill some notion of what it means to be a good or a great man.
Right. But what did you mean when you said, what kind of man are you? What does that refer to? What were you thinking it was referring to?
Well, I think that all people and all men want to be, or hope to be, or dream to be the best men they can be. They would like to be. Maybe they don't want to put forth the effort, but I think that that's a kind of a root desire of, like, nobody wants to be insignificant. Nobody wants to be deemed a failure. I think that those pains and fears are more acute for some than others. I look at these sad, horrible men who shoot up yoga studios and write manifestos against all the women who didn't sleep with them. And then there are all these guys who hold them up as heroes. And so I believe that all these men are, they want to be, in their own eyes and in the eyes of their community, great men. I don't think they are, but I think that really brings up a question that is, I'm curious about, is hearing what makes a good man. And I would love to hear from men and women who have thoughts on this. So at any time during our episode, you can call in. I would love to hear what you have to say. What do you believe makes a good man? And our phone number is 888-627-6008.
And we have spared no expense.
I have
presented you the number on an index card. I want you to know those were from my private stash of index cards.
The best stash.
I didn't know that they were being used today, but here they are.
Surprise.
So just to go back to your what kind of man are you, and sort of like, I actually agree with what you were saying. In other words, I think we are surrounded by, you know, role models and ideals, like vague notions of what I think we are supposed to be. And sort of like, and I've said this a million times, that I think my role model certainly was my father. I think he did the best he could. What he did best was giving me sort of like a series of kind of like, this is how not to be. If you see me doing this in the world, you shouldn't. I didn't know that for many years because I had to go through my own trial and error in order to kind of get to that place. Oh, right. Yes, that is the picture of myself.
And you can read all about it in Devin's book, 10,000 Miles with My Dead Father's Ashes.
You could. And I think it's still available.
Yeah.
So I think that's what most men, or most men do, and I think this is true for everybody. You have sort of like a role model, you have somebody that you admire, and you become that thing. I'm going to completely disagree with your follow-up statement, which was that there are all of these manifesto people, and there's all of these fans of the manifesto evildoers. I would argue that that's like beyond not true. I think, have there been some crazy knuckleheads? Absolutely. There's always knuckleheads. In every era, across all of human history, there have been people who've done really wrong things who thought they were right. And some of those people had a very small handful of people that were abiding by those terms, sometimes by force, right, or fear. But I don't think, by and large, your garden variety murderer is adored by throngs of men everywhere clamoring to agree with them. I think that's absolutely not true. I think your average guy in the world is well-intentioned, by and large, working to be a better person in some small way, depending on their measure of consciousness. And most people are trying to do good in the world. And I think for a great many people, they are failing to some degree because it's hard to do every day in some sort of a way that's always positive and productive and upbeat and never offending anybody and crossing old ladies across the street. But now that's offensive because women's empowerment or something to that effect. And so I think what ends up happening is we have these notions, and I would actually say it was much easier when I was growing up, because sort of like this sort of a notion of a chivalrous, strong man was probably a much more prevalent thing that everybody could kind of aspire to. And hold on, I'm almost done. I know I could see you falling out of your mouth. I could see it, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. I would argue that right now, if you are a 20-year-old guy, a 20-something-year-old guy, I think you're getting all kinds of conflicting messages. And I think it's very, very difficult, or more difficult based on society. In other words, we had a much more homogenous view of what a man should be, let's say, for the last, you know, up until 30 years ago.
Well, we had 3 TV stations and that was it.
That was it. So, and then Father's Knows Best was the ideal, right?
Yeah.
Who was it? Mr. Brady. He was the guy. And we all wanted to, like, we wanted him to be our dads. We wanted to be like him. We wanted that sort of thing. And then sure, throw in sports heroes and things like that. But for the most part, I think that's what most men were attempting to aspire to with varying degrees of success, based on money and upbringing and other things. But it's gotten very much, I think it's gotten a lot more complicated.
Well, and now there are these horrible pickup artist classes for the last few decades. Back during my online dating years, before I met you and there was no reason to continue, I had in my profile at some point something about liking chivalry. You know, the guy who walks on, you know, the street side of the sidewalk, which you learned very quickly about me that I love that.
I was actually, a woman told me that, a dear friend of mine named Saran told me that many years ago.
A lot of us dig that. Like, I'm a feminist and I love chivalry because it's kind and it's sweet and it's noble and there's kind of a feeling of heroicism. And I remember putting that in my profile and somebody wrote back, you know, and it was crude, but it was like chivalry. He literally, and I remember nothing, but I remember this. He wrote, "Chivalry never made a woman wet," which let me know that this man did not know women. and I see, like, all the time on, you know, social media, since during the pandemic, we're on social media even more, from men who have these very, very odd ideas of women and what we like and what our value is in the world.
Well, but that has everything to do with men thinking differently than women. And of course, I get it. If you were watching and you had sort of like I'm a woman and I'm very connected to my male energy and all that stuff. I mean, that's true. I'm talking in very broad strokes right now.
It's good to have both.
No, and then I think we do have both. I think we all have those kinds of things. And then over during the course of our lives, we may cultivate a particular energy more than another kind of energy.
Well, one of the sexiest things that you did in our early days, and I found the photo and sent it to our producer, so it'll be on the show replay page. But I had a watermelon, and I was going to cut the watermelon with a steak knife.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
I didn't know.
Clearly you didn't know.
And when you peeled yourself off the floor from laughing, you went out and you took me shopping for grown-up knives and pots and pans.
And that was part of it, because here's the thing. I remember opening up the silverware drawer.
Yeah.
And I was dating an adult woman. There was
who didn't cook much, obviously.
Right, no, without question. There was no way you could cook anything. There was it was like a spoon that was taken from the airlines, and then a packet of soy sauce in the spoon spot. And then there was three completely mismatched knives that had, you know what I mean? It was I mean, the reason why places like Costco
and
exist.
And you married me anyway.
Right. No, I totally did. Because I had the knives. I had a set of silverware. I had those kinds of things. And so it just made, it was almost astonishing. And the same thing with the pans. That was even worse. There was a pan that clearly somebody had taken a mallet and turned it over when they were playing drums on the pan. And they just banging the pan.
You are still making up.
I'm not. I've never seen a pan like this thing where somebody, where I didn't know where on earth.
It wasn't like I was using it anyway.
No, there was nobody using the silverware. There was nobody using the pans.
So I have this really sexy photo of my new boyfriend from 8 years ago, who's now my husband, carrying all of these fancy schmancy brand new pots and pans.
They weren't,
to my,
you know,
apartment.
What? Not even fancy schmancy.
To me.
Right. No, because they were new and nobody was playing.
They had lids.
Nobody was playing drums with wooden mallets on them. So it was, yes.
Who knew you could cook in them?
Right. Who knew that fire made things warm?
So when you come over for dinner, just know that I'm not the one who's cooking.
Not in the least.
And you'll thank us.
Right. And I would thank you. I figured that out.
Oh, I was smart, wasn't I? I got out of cooking really fast.
That was a miracle. Yeah, no, actually what we did was we went to, I think it was Washington Boulevard and Western in Los Angeles, where they have, it's actually on Washington. It's on Washington. Just east, there is, and I can't remember the name of the place, but it was a cooking supply place, which a buddy of mine turned me on to, where you get kitchen grade stuff, restaurant grade pots and pans. They're really cheap. They don't have to have special, you can get things with special coatings and things like that, but just to boil water.
Oh, yeah. There was extra gluten flour, which was mysterious to me since everybody I know in Southern California is gluten-free. But for people who want to actually bake, I guess gluten can be handy.
Flour.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just flour.
So, yeah, there are the things that for me that were the core necessities of what I was looking for in a partner. And then there were all the sexy would be nice stuff that I didn't expect to find. Cooking wasn't even on my radar, but and you play music and you build houses. Those are really sexy.
Right. Now, just to be clear, and this is in fairness, I would love to have you all believe that I'd always been a cook, not even marginally. I think what had happened was that As my kid got older, I wanted her to know how to cook, or at least somebody cooking around, so she could have some vague idea that she could make her own food, mm-hmm. right? And so I bought a cookbook, and I had always believed, we're obviously going on a tangent here, but so I had always believed that there was a special technique to doing something that made cooking a thing. And what I didn't understand, like, I just assumed you had to do a special thing. Like, I barbecued, mm-hmm. right? You just throw some meat on the grill. At some point, it starts smelling good, and, you know, and off you go. I assumed cooking was a very involved process, and it certainly can be, right?
Certainly
I know people
beyond my scope.
Who make some gourmet. I've had meals that are like, I had a meal in a place called Fiesta Americana.
I knew you were going to talk about Mexico.
Well, no, but this very specific place. It is in the corridor that is sort of like on the way to Cabo. And I'm not a big Cabo fan. I mean, I love Mexico across the board. Cabo is not necessarily my number one place, but there was a resort called Fiesta Americana. I don't know if the guy's there anymore, but the head chef there was so good. Mind blowing, like everything. Like, I'm drooling now, even discussing this guy. Anyway, long story short, I had this notion in my head that, you know, you needed like innate talents in order to cook. And so, you know, I remember this having dinner with the chef of Fiesta Americana. And he was like, you know, I'm really sort of like a self-taught guy. I just had access to foods and kitchens and things. And I played and played and played until I found things that I really loved. Mm-hmm. And he made amazing, amazing food. So that kind of planted a little seed that I could, in fact, go out and maybe do my own cooking. And I bought a cookbook.
Mind blowing.
Right? And I think I discovered quickly, if you have a good cookbook and you follow the directions of the recipe, you can make a bomb, a ridiculously good meal.
Maybe we'll post some of your favorite cookbooks on our replay.
Because I do have a handful of cookbooks that I love.
Something that you said, since I would like to like get somewhat back to our topic.
We'll get there. And we have loads. We have loads
no,
of time.
You still have like 10 more.
No, you're thinking of another list, but I do have. Okay. We'll get probably to one of my next on the list.
And call in and interrupt us at any time. The number is 888-627-6008. Number again is 888-627-6008. And women, especially women, although I want to hear from guys too, like anybody who's single and likes guys, what are you looking for in a man that you consider to make him a good man? This is an opportunity to like speak it into existence. One of the surprise things over the course of our courtship that let me know that you were a good guy. I was not looking for somebody who was a parent, didn't want to share, didn't think I would make good babies at my age. And you came with a daughter.
I did.
You did. And your having a daughter let me know what kind of a man you were because of your devotion, your willingness to drop everything and wake up at 5 a.m. to drive down to San Diego to drive her 2 blocks to the first day of school and then turn around and sit in traffic for 4 hours.
Yeah, it was rough.
But that's a
lucky thing for me.
Your daughter made you a better human being in my eyes. It's like, that's how you take care of those you love. So I would say loyalty and caring and protection, honesty, integrity is just a huge value for me. Like, I couldn't love somebody I don't respect and trust. And I was 47 before I got married ever in my life, and you were the one I chose because you are the only guy who could maintain my interest and my trust, if that makes sense. Like, I'm still crazy nutty attracted to you.
Great, I love that. but here's the thing. Here's the only problem with this whole line of dialogue so far. Is that nobody cares about me. They care about their own relationships. They care about their own goodness. They care about their own desire to move forward in their own lives in some sort of a really positive, wonderful way.
We did get a message from Clay, and I actually love that we got this message from a guy. What he says is what makes a good man. A good man is kind, caring, loving, nurturing, sets a good example for children or others, respects everyone the same, looks or not, the sole criteria. Avoid the bad apples in and around your life and loved ones. If needed, plant seeds. Answer the phone for family. Support each family member. So it's that nurturing thing. Be a cheerleader for those you love. Be a good leader. Lead your family out of harm's way. That's, and to safety in an emergency. That's, I think that's a...
That's the chivalry thing.
That is that chivalry thing. Like, we hear a lot about toxic masculinity, and it actually just feels good to be, you know, hearing the opposite. Oh, I love this. Treat your wife like a princess and equal. Open and hold the door for your wife. Yeah, it's the chivalry thing. Lead by example and follow the traffic rules. By the way, you know, when we're a passenger in a car, we feel a lot safer when you follow the traffic rules. There was some other
Is that stuff. On Clay's list?
That's on Clay's list.
About traffic rules?
Yeah, down at second from the bottom.
Oh, right, follow traffic rules. Yeah. By example. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. He says, do not use foul language ever. Like that, I'm fine with foul language, maybe not having it directed at me abusively. And so that's just one of those areas where we all have our different criteria, you know, what we're comfortable and okay with.
See, I would argue the more specific you get, mm-hmm. like on Clay's list, and by the way, I think caring and loving and nurturing are all good things to strive for. I think those are all useful things. I think, though, there is sort of like, you know, the following the traffic rules. Do I think somebody can get a speeding ticket and still be a good person? Yes, I do. Don't talk about stuff that pushes buttons in others. Yeah, that's one of those things that, like...
I don't think that's possible, but I think it is possible when we learn each other's buttons is...
Well, the problem is that it's hard to go out in the world and have an opinion on anything where somebody isn't going to be potentially offended.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing we can
especially
do is...
Especially
in 2020. But I don't think that necessarily is a criteria for being a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, like, in other words, if I know that you have some past trauma, going out of my way to bring up the past trauma is probably not a useful thing, right? If it's just going to cause you harm, and I know it's going to cause you harm. I think it's different when you're just trying to sort of like articulate ideas.
Yeah.
That's kind of where, for me anyway, that's sort of where I get lost in that particular list. But by the way, I think what Clay did was great and brave.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he came out and did that. And that was fun. And I'm glad that you read it, and maybe he'll find out about it and watch the show and appreciate it, or say, how dare you critique my...
And you missed the most important thing.
Right, and I probably did.
List.
I didn't reread it, and I was just kind of letting it glaze over me. But so that goes. So should we refer to my list, or do you have some more ideas on Clay? Because I'm glad to do either.
I think we should look at your list. And also, the genesis of this whole topic was... I managed to get through all of the 80s and all of the decades afterwards without having seen The Karate Kid.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And you married me anyway. But yeah, you didn't know this. Ridiculous. You didn't know this.
No, well, I might have had a different response. How did I know?
And
you might have had a different response had you known that your husband walks around wearing plaids and stripes at the same time.
I need to re-examine our relationship.
I kind of thought that you might. So here we are.
So Devin was watching Cobra Kai. And I was running out of things to watch on Netflix. And so Devin found The Karate Kid online, and we watched it. And it was great. And then I dove into Cobra Kai, which I actually like way better.
Yeah, no, it's you're talking about 20 half-hour episodes. Yeah, so
the movie was great.
10-hour movie.
There's so much more nuance and depth. And it's also really fun to watch these kids now as middle-aged people my age. Creaky and relatable. That's how I know I'm an adult, is I find the adults more interesting. But what I found really compelling was you had who used to be the bad guys, very two-dimensional bad guys in the movie. You get to know them better and their motivations and their vulnerabilities a lot better in Cobra Kai. And the good guys are not always that great. So what unifies all of them is whether I like what they're doing or not, they're all striving to be the best men they can be. They're just getting very different instruction on what that means. And I would venture that some of my single women friends have a very high priority on the man being the breadwinner. And others, that is not as important. For me, integrity, creating a safe, emotional, nurturing space for me, indulging in my absolutely limitless need for attention and affection is, Devin understands, is my highest priority. Well, that and that I can respect that you know, my partner is smart and funny and I respect him. So we all have our different definitions of what makes a good man. Like people in the KKK, who I don't think are good people, undoubtedly see themselves as good people and live in a culture that may define a good man as violent and racist. And that's how subjective it is. I don't subscribe to that. So I thought this was just an interesting question. If you have your own comments or point of view, you can call in at 888-627-6008. And whether you do or not, we're going to dive into Devin's list of what makes a good man.
Well, okay, so last time when we had a conversation about this topic, so we're going to have a little bit of a recap. So we talked about this idea of integrity, and that's basically a value system. And you know, my value system is going to be differing from some other person's value system. The value system that I'm going to create is, with any luck, will help serve me being a moral, just, kind, loving, caring person out in the world.
I was having a conversation with my coach yesterday about the difference between values and hungers. And his distinction is a hunger is what I want for me. Like, I want people to be respectful to me. I want people to be honest with me. I want people to be kind with me. But I don't necessarily want to be honest or kind or respectful to anybody else. And that would not be a value. That would be a hunger. But when I want it for everybody, when I want everybody to have safety and respect and abundance and beauty and confidence and love, when I want it for everybody, then it becomes a value. And I thought that was so integrity becomes something for everybody, and And I define integrity as wholeness, like an integer. You can't divide. Integrity, integrity. Okay. Do you have a second idea on your list?
Yes, I do. And so the second one is going to be really complicated to explain.
Great. Yes!
So we have time. We have time, which means we may not get to a third one. But so it's this notion of will. And so will is the way I would describe it is that we're all here for a particular purpose. This is just my belief. Take it for what it's worth. I think we have like an internal thing that we know it's right and wrong for us. I would argue that the vast majority of us, you know, again, we're going to strive towards doing good things. We're going to wave at our neighbors. We're going to try and put food on the table for our kids and families and try to be of support and love where we can, right? And sometimes some of us do that really well. Some of us don't. Some of us will try and fail repeatedly. And some of us will kind of go, oh, that's what I need to do, right? That's kind of, again, going back to my father. My father was a very loving, wonderful guy. And at the same time, he just had a very narrow bandwidth of his capacity to be present on a daily basis, which is tough. And I understand that. It just means we get to work at it. So going back to this idea of will, it's sort of like getting in touch with the piece of you that helps move you forward. I would say that will has to do with sort of like what your kind of larger purpose is. Maybe that's your career. Maybe it has nothing to do with career. I would say that it's one of those ideas that gets married quite well to somebody's ability to follow through on important things. So I'm probably doing like this. I remember taking a class talking about writers, right? Since we've talked about Hemingway, we'll kind of go down this road for a second. So there was this idea where, an American writer tends to write directly to the thing that they're talking about, right? Like one sentence leads to the next sentence that's all heading toward the one thing. And that's our through point and that's our thing. So Japanese writers, or at least according to my professor from a number of years ago, he suggested that Japanese writers tend to talk around the thing they're trying to get at. Like that's part of the mystery, part of the puzzle of like Haruki Murakami as an example, is that he's talking around the thing. Like, so this thing becomes this sort of like vague kind of thing. And I think that's part of what happens with our will, right? Because my will is going to be different from, again, my opinion, my belief system, that it's going to be different from yours. Mm-hmm. And mine can coexist with yours. And that we are all trying to figure it out. We succeed, we fail miserably. Somebody joins the Ku Klux Klan and hopefully they figure out quickly that's probably not a way to live your life. But I'm sure in the back of their mind, they're trying to strive towards this thing that will give their life meaning so that they can go out and do whatever goodness they're intending to do. And so that requires a sort of like what I would say a bit of passion, a little bit of inspiration, and a little bit of sort of follow through. Of course, getting to those places are tough. And I would argue that perhaps the biggest component to this, is this number three? No. It's number four. So we're going to skip number three for just at least this moment. So I think, and this is, again, I think all of the ideas that we're talking about kind of fit together.
So is will sort of like dharma, your right path?
Yeah. And I think attempting to do your right path is bigger and more important than your career. Like, I think, money's great. Like, I hope everybody who's watching this has buckets of cash raining from the sky and you have exactly what you want. And Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, all those good things in the world. Mm-hmm. But having the right career doesn't necessarily mean having the right life.
how does somebody determine what their right path is, their will? Because I have the sense that there, you know, I think of the self-will run riot. I'm supposed to be a movie star and save the world that way. And maybe like divinity is going, maybe not that.
Right. So I would argue the more if you decide, again, my opinion, if you decide the thing you need to do is sort of where you get patted on the back on the end of it, that's not it. Like if you're like, I want to lead the revolution. I mean, you could lead the revolution, but I don't think that's the sort of like the guiding.
But would you
focus.
Be okay leading the revolution and getting no credit for it?
Well, and that's also the trick.
Yeah.
Part of the trick is if you're doing it because you're expecting somebody to pat you on the back and rub your belly, tell you you're a good person, give you a treat, now go to the toilet out in the yard. You know, if that's the case, then I think that's not it at all. I mean, again, you can lead the revolution, but if you're leading the revolution with some secret internal thing that says, if I lead the revolution, everyone will know me and love me and validate me, which, by the
that
way, we all
nice.
Crave that stuff, right? We all crave
like
that stuff, but we're talking about to be a good person,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think certainly, at least on my list, I think what's really important is being conscious of the fact that there's this thing, there's this through line that's going through you where you can be of genuine importance. But I think soon as you start making that genuine importance about your ego, what you can gain from it, what you can manipulate from it. In other words, without question, all you have to do is turn on the news and see lots of talented musicians and actors and entertainers that at some point start taking themselves far too seriously. And then all of a sudden, the things that made them funny have just dried up and blown away.
Well, I'm not a guy or an expert in what it's like to be a guy. I have dated a lot of guys. We won't say how many because my husband's here. But what I will say is that I have noticed so many guys I've known had this thing about the Knights of the Round Table. And this, like, there's like this draw to noble self-sacrifice for a great cause, I think is a big cultural theme for men of what it means to be a good man. I love that. Not that I want anybody to go out and sacrifice themselves and die, but I think that that is a beautiful thing, that selfless love and service notion of that kind of heroism. I appreciate and admire and just want to give some love to all of you guys who, you know, are putting the safety of your loved ones first or going out there and risking life and limb to like put out fires or save people in need. You know, that is, guys get a lot of trash and there's also a lot of heroism out there. Okay.
Okay, what?
What was your number four?
My number four is an aid to number two.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think all of these things, it's sort of like an aid in figuring out the purpose. You talked about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's consciousness. In other words, I think we have these two roads. I've given this analogy a million times, is that we have sort of, for me anywhere, I have like these two directions.
Snickers and the broccoli.
Totally. And so I can go down the road of the broccoli, steamed broccoli with nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you get a twist of salt. And then you have like a mountain of Snickers bars. And the Snickers bars are delicious. And you know they're delicious. And you also know if you eat nothing but Snickers bars, it's just bad news. Like in the big picture, in the long run, the Snickers bars aren't a way of life. You could make a life out of broccoli, right? You'd probably actually be really healthy because there's all that good nutrients in it. Less so of the Snickers bar, but we like the Snickers bars because they're fantastic.
Life should have both.
Life should have both. But the point is, if you're taking one route or another route, mm-hmm. if there's one path or another path, you'd rather make a conscious decision, I would argue, towards the broccoli. That you're sitting down and go, okay, what do I need to do here? What will be the thing that will improve my life and those around me? Because usually if I'm improving the lives of those around me, my life is getting improved as well.
So when you have those conversations with guys that I...
You overhear.
I overhear.
You press on glass.
Yeah, I don't know who you're speaking to.
Right.
Barry, but I have...
Faceless guys.
Yeah. I get so much
Once
pleasure.
Once in a while, a woman too. So I have
yeah.
to...
Yeah. No, but I have heard like one-sided conversations of you explaining to men why they shouldn't sleep with that woman who likes them so much more than they like the woman. So that's kind of...
Well, I think it has to do with the consciousness. In other words, you could put the girl who digs you on the Snickers side of things. And of course, once in a while... Should you just have sex for sex's sake because it's fun?
Snickers sex.
Right. Have Snickers sex. Right. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to make a conscious decision. If you know that you are not into that girl, does it serve the girl just to take advantage of the situation because she's attractive enough and she digs you enough where you can say, all right, she may not be for me, but I'm going to go down the Snickers bars path because I know the Snickers are delicious. I would also say that if you're heading down the Snickers bar path, you are less likely to meet the girl of your dreams, who's much more likely to be on the broccoli path.
Yeah.
And right, for the long-term big picture thing. In other words, if you're like, I don't want to get married, I just want to go out with a bunch of girls and that's what I want, then the Snickers path is for you and enjoy yourself.
Except there will be drama on that path.
What, the Snickers path?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there will be, that you will totally have to pay. Listen, Snickers are delicious in the moment. And then if you're only eating Snickers bars and you gain 50 pounds because that's what eating only Snickers bars is likely to do.
Or a really, really unhappy partner or an unexpected baby or any other kind of drama.
Right. There's tons of things. So what I would argue ultimately is that the Snickers bars path is really about your reactive nature, right? We have these thoughts. We have these feelings. We want to go with our thoughts and feelings. We assume we could only be right, that we see the picture very clear.
How can it be wrong if it feels so good?
Right, exactly. So all of those things are more often than not about the reactive thing. Because if I sat somebody down who's only eating Snickers bars, hey, listen, man, you know that you probably could use, your body could use more nutrients than what the Snickers bar offers. I'm willing to bet in most cases somebody's like, yeah, no, I could see where the broccoli, I just don't like it and I'm not going to eat it.
Well,
fair enough. At least that's a conscious, truthful answer. But I think the conscious part of it is, do I want to take actions in my life that aren't useful to me, that don't serve me in the big picture and don't serve those people around me?
And I don't know that that's a conversation you could have with an 18-year-old boy.
No.
But that is a conversation.
No, I wouldn't want that conversation when I was 18.
But
I had a very different
that's
philosophy.
That's why midlife love is so much better.
Right. I didn't even know steamed broccoli path was an option.
It wasn't one you would have taken.
No, that would be the point. It's like behind a shrubbery somewhere. You want to look behind the shrubbery or eat all the Snickers bars? No, I'm going to eat all the Snickers bars. So we're not necessarily like, if you're 18, enjoy your life. Know that there's the broccoli path that is waiting for you where you can have yourself an enjoyable
life. We're talking to the grown-ups.
Right, we are. Are there 18-year-old people listening?
No. I don't know.
No. unless they just saw my face and thought, oh, that's really compelling.
I want to be him when I grow up.
Right, absolutely, that guy. Did anyone ever tell him that plaids and stripes don't go together?
Except on you, my love.
All right. Well, you know, I'll let it work if I can get away with it.
We're very close to the end of our hour, and I didn't prepare you for this at all.
I'm not.
But my job is to keep you uncomfortable. We just had a winter solstice. We just had the conjunction of structure and integrity, loving Saturn and expansive, ebullient joy and pleasure and travel loving Jupiter kind of in the same place. And you actually led me through a really amazing spell Saturday night. So what could you say or give to our audience to like make the magical most of winter solstice and Christmas this week?
Oh, I mean, you know, I don't even know if it's going to be that long. I think that's going to be different for everybody. I mean, I think part of it is kind of starting something anew. You know, this is where we're all of a sudden the return of the light's going to start happening. We're not going to get darkness at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's one of those things that you take that return of the light and you do something with it. You know, if you believe in sort of like a ritual kind of, you know, sensibility. And by the way, every single religion has some kind of ritual attached, right? Like, so as a Baha'i, you know, when we get together, we're absolutely, part of our ritual is that we're going to read prayers, like for sure.
It's a feast, you won't
no
eat.
Food. Yeah, there's no food in the feast, but it's a feast for your mind. But that said, I love the Baha'is. I'm grateful for them. But so my point is that if you're looking for an energy that's increasing, then look for something that you want to increase in yourself, in your life, and it could be your money or it could be anything. But I think the idea is that while things are increasing, especially when like. Saturn and Jupiter are in conjunction the way they are at this very moment. I think what you do is you look for ways to increase that thing. And it could be anything. It could be increase your willpower. It could be increase your happiness, increase your money. And then you come up with some notions that you can take, understanding that right now I can take some kind of an action that's going to be useful to myself and others. And by the way, so we still have to do number 3 on the list.
Yeah, but I want to say something about using Jupiter and Saturn is like, it's, and now we have, I think we have a waxing moon, I'm not sure. But we're having an increase in light. And what I love about the addition of Saturn, and right now, like one of my favorite astrologers says that, you know, the two are at war and Saturn wins this round because they're in Capricorn where Saturn is happy and Jupiter is weak. But it's like the darkest of night, you know, the shortest day of the year, and it just gets brighter. So the seed is, what can you grow with the power of Saturn for a strong foundation, for the integrity that was lacking in the past? What can be fixed so that you have a container for more abundance and more love and more success and more health and more happiness? So instead of Jupiter, which is like this fun-loving, you know, gimme, 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 let's travel the world, let's be wise, and it's all going to be fun and fattening. Now it's actually going to be, it's going to be fun, but healthy and sustainable is the paradigm that we can play with as we like move out of this dumpster fire year of 2020.
Oh, this is just
and create
terrible,
like something better, like better government, better health, better economy, better social contract, just like everything that's wrong really got visible this year.
so that we get to choose what doesn't belong in our lives. Things and people that we thought we were fine with, we discover, oh, this is no longer a good fit, which means that everything that we bring in moving forward is a better fit. So the Saturday.
I don't know about that.
I think that's a choice. I think it's a choice. It's like, I release you with love and I'm moving towards more integrity. Because we live with like over 7 billion people. Are we at 8 yet? I don't know. But it's just such an abundant planet that we can always find good people and people to love and people to partner with and people to resonate with. We don't have to hold on to the crumbs. We don't have to hold on to stuff that doesn't feel right and doesn't work. By the way, even the best relationship is going to have those scary moments where we're bringing out the worst in each other. That's like, that's that Hemingway quote. I mean, love is not for sissies. There are going to be those moments where it's like, oh my God, I chose this person. And then you come back to love and you make it even stronger. And that's why when I was single and I was asking every couple I knew who had been happily married for decades and decades and decades, what the secret was. I thought they were going to say, like, don't go to bed angry or, you know, give me some advice. Every single person said, I picked the right person. And I think when you pick the right person, you pick the person that both of you are going to stick together and work it out for each other. We are really heading to the end. So to wrap it up, we will be back next week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific with another.
That's what we do.
Yes, for the last episode of the year. And I think we'll come up with some kind of ritual for ending the year and creating the new one. I will also post the link to my complete and create New Year manifestation formula to the page for anybody who wants to go through that. And Devin, do you have a final word?
No, you did great.
Thank you.
We'll see you guys next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Mwah.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.